come south and sweet. I can hold it if you want to go.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjali Pavani. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjali Pavani. Gopi Jana Pala.
Thank you.
your favorite Krishna book story? You have a favorite one? Govardhan Hill? Mother Yashoda binding Krishna?
I actually like all of them.
You like all of them. That's okay. How about Mother Yashoda looking inside Krishna's mouth and seeing the universe? You like that one?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're reading from, that chapter. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Nana.
Chapter 8. Has a lot. It's the childhood pastimes. Includes the name-giving ceremony. Before the name-giving ceremony, Nanda Maharaj went to Mathura to pay his taxes. While he was away paying his taxes, Putana came, tried to kill Krishna. And when he came back, he saw this humongous body lying in the field with Krishna playing on her body. He was shocked. And he picked up Krishna and embraced Krishna, and Mother Yashoda did what Mother Yashoda did. And then after that was the killing of the cart demon. Still Krishna's really small baby. Krishna killed Chakatasura. And then the name-giving ceremony took place, big festival in honor of Krishna's new name. And then his childhood pastime, crawling and talking and walking and stealing butter. You like that pastime too, sure. Mukund Shore pastimes. And so delight, it's Vatsalya Rasa, this chapter. And parental affection. And the men, cowherd men, cowherd ladies, they go and complain to Mother Yashoda about Krishna stealing, that back and forth, so many things. Krishna wanted that Mother Yashoda, wanted that affection for Mother Yashoda to scold him. I mean, most children don't like to be scolded by mom and dad, but Krishna wanted that. It was the kind of affection, but the parent, Mother Yashoda, would give when she would scold him. She didn't scold him. She just embraced him and said, "Why do you do things like this?" So he decided to do something she would scold him for. He ate dirt. Mother Yashoda wasn't going to put up with that. So Krishna said, "I didn't eat dirt. They're lying. Then show me inside your mouth." She looked inside his mouth. She saw what she saw. Pretty amazing what she saw. All the planets, all the mountains, all the rivers, all the trees, all the living entities, all forms of life, the totality of everything, the sky and the air, and false ego and intelligence and all living entities. And she even saw herself looking inside Krishna's mouth, inside Krishna's mouth. So she began to process what she just experienced. And after processing it a bit, she came to the conclusion, whoever he is, he's my son. And her motherly affection was restored by Krishna's yogamaya potency. And then the concluding part of that narration, Shukadeva Goswami says, "The Vedas teach this and that and that and that aspects of the Supreme Lord, but Mother Yashoda was beyond that. She just saw the Supreme Lord as her child with motherly affection." And then we've been discussing the next two verses where Maharaj Pariksit, hearing this, goes, "Wow, what elevated activities in their previous lives did Nanda Yashoda undergo in order to achieve this kind of love for Krishna?" And then the next verse, which is what we're discussing now, is the love of Nanda and Yashoda, because they experience Krishna's childhood pastimes in their fullness, their good fortune was greater than that of Vasudeva and Devaki, who gave birth to Krishna, but then never experienced his childhood pastimes. So, Mahabhaga, most fortunate. And this evening, we're going to read about the same section from verses from Canto 10, Chapter 8, but we're going to read the way Sanatana Goswami describes it in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Again, this is kind of like Nanda Yashoda over here, Vasudeva Devaki over there. Both are eternal associates of Krishna in his Krishna Loka pastimes, one in Vrindavan, the other in Mathura. But the comparative love of the two, the comparative good fortune of the two. So this is Sanatana Goswami. Brihat Bhagavatamrita, part 3, or section 3, chapter 7, and it's several verses, starting with 127. Thereafter, O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Bharatas, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead became the son of Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, they attained perfectly fixed devotional service for him, and so also did all the other inhabitants of Raja, the Gopas and Gopis. Now, the verse says they attained, although they're eternal associates, so I'm going to explain. Commentary. To explain why Nanda and Yashoda were able to drink so fully from the nectarian ocean of Sri Krishna's all-auspicious childhood pastimes, Shukadeva Goswami answered the question from Parikshit Maharaj that, you know, what did they do in their previous lives? What could warrant this good fortune? By recounting how in a previous birth, Nanda and Yashoda were blessed by Lord Brahma to achieve the highest devotion for Krishna. So what's all that about? Their eternal associates, how were they blessed by Lord Brahma? And the answer is it's a little complicated, but Drona and Dara, husband and wife, in the heavenly realm, they were partial expansions of the eternal Nanda and Yashoda, respectively. That's described in Padma Purana. And so they're existing in their vasus, he's vasu and his wife, and they were childless, and they were desiring to have the Supreme Bodhisattva's son, so they approached Brahma for that benediction. Brahma smiled and said, so be it. So they, Drona and Dara, this is described in the Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 8. That Drona and Dara manifested themselves, a portion of them, an expanded portion of them, within Nanda and Yashoda. And so when Nanda and Yashoda became the mother and father of Krishna, Drona and Dara were within their personality. There was two people within one form. And when Krishna's pastimes were concluded, Nanda and Yashoda went to their aprakat state, the eternal pastimes of Krishna and Vraja. And Drona and Dara went back to the heavenly kingdom. So that's this reference of Pramod giving his benediction. Here's what it says in Mahabharata, and then later, next purport, it's going to say specifically what it says in Canto 10, Chapter 8. But here from Mahabharata Tatparya, Brahma says to Drona and Dara, "My dear Drona and Dara, please accept this benediction from me. I bless you, Drona, that you may become Nanda Maharaj, the Vatsalya grandson of Devamidha, the Vaishya grandson of Devamidha, and brother of Maharaj Vasudev. O Dara, I give you the benediction that you may become Nanda's wife, and you will become known as Yashoda." So I did this chart. Did I send this out? Did you receive it? No, Drona and Dara and the family lineage of how they're connected. One of Devamidha had two wives, a Vaishya wife and a Kshatriya wife. So from the Vaishya wife, a son was born named Parjanya. Parjanya became the father of Nanda. And there were four other brothers, five brothers. Upananda was the eldest brother, Nanda was the middle brother, and there were two other younger brothers. And their names are given. So Nanda had a grandfather named Devamira. That's mentioned here. And the Kshatriya wife gave birth to Shurasena. And Shurasena had several children. One of Shurasena's daughters was Pritha. And Shurasena gave Pritha to his friend, King Kunti, to raise as a daughter, because he was without a daughter and was eager for a daughter. So, you know the story? So Kunti, because his name was Kunti Bhoja, he renamed her Kunti, but her original name was Pritha. So we find sometimes Arjuna is a son of Pritha, or the son of Kunti. So Shurasena had several sons, one of whom was Vasudeva, but there was another son, brother of Vasudeva, named Devabhaga. And Devabhaga was the father of Uddhava, Krishna's dear friend Uddhava, and Krishna's dear friend Arjuna. They're both cousin brothers. So because over here is Vasudeva, the son of Shurasena, and over there is Nanda, son of Parjanya, they're not exactly brothers, but cousin brothers like that. That's the statement here from Mahabharata. And we hear something further in the next purport from Bhagavatam chapter 8. So back to this verse, this is same chapter 8, 10, 8, 51. We're reading 47 about how fortunate are Nanda and Yashoda. A little bit later comes this one, 51. Shukadev concludes this lengthy description about Drona, Dara, etc. You know, how did they become so fortunate. Because Brahma is a first-class devotee, by his benediction, Nanda Jasoda developed perfect love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, the annihilator of demons and other wicked persons. And the Lord assumed the role of their son. So that's one of the meanings of Janardana. Here's another. Because all people are Jana, hanker with ardor, ardanti, to achieve from him what they imagine to be most important in life. He's the fulfiller of desire, super soul. Nanda and Yashoda, who considered Krishna alone important, were able to obtain him as their son. In this verse, text 51, there's a grammatical term, putri bhute, which indicates something that has become what it was not before. Like, okay, so Krishna wasn't their son, and then he became their son. He, who is the Supreme Truth, Super Soul, and Supreme Lord, cannot be born son of anyone. Yet, because he understood that the highest mode of devotion to him cannot develop unless he becomes the son of his devotees, he became the child of Nanda and Yashoda. By doing this, he displayed his super excellent qualities, especially his selfless concern for his devotees. Paragraph. By Brahma's benediction, the devotion of Nanda and Yashoda became irrevocably fixed. Nitaram asit. It's going to explain it. You didn't become anything, but it's just the drona and dara personalities. All the gopas and gopis of Raja had great love for Krishna, but the love shown by Nanda and Yashoda is greater than that of everyone else, at least in the context of Krishna's early childhood. Later, of course, when Krishna reached the Pauganda age, and especially in his Kaishora age, the ultimate love, the ultimate form of love for him became revealed in the young gopis. The gopis in Madhurya Rasa, the most precious of all devotional jewels, begins manifesting itself slightly even during Krishna's balya years. Garments, pastime. They're little girls. As Parikshit Maharaj continues reciting verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, he gradually comes to the point of realization, in particular when he speaks the verses describing Uddha's visit to Vrindavan. That comes couple chapters later. Chapter 45, I think. In the present verse, Sri Shukadeva addresses Parikshit as a descendant of the eminent Bharata dynasty, implying that Parikshit himself should now be able to answer his own question as to how Nanda and Yashoda attained the perfection of having Krishna as their son. The answer to that question is as follows. In a previous life, Sri Devaki and Vasudeva worshipped the Supreme Lord with the desire to obtain a son like him. You know who that was in a previous life of Devaki and Vasudeva? Sutapan Prishni, right? You heard those names? No? Okay. Sutapan. That was their name in a previous life. Husband and wife. The Lord bestowed upon them that special blessing by pledging to become their son in three births. Sri Nanda and Yashoda, however, prayed to render the best devotional service to Krishna, and it was Brahma who awarded the fulfillment of their prayer. Thus, the personality of Godhead demonstrated that a benediction from his devotee is more valuable than one directly from him. God? Okay. Paragraph. By descending to earth in Brajabhumi, Krishna expanded his supremely attractive childhood pastimes for the benefit of his parents, Nanda and Yashoda, and for the benefit of everyone related to them. The ecstatic devotion for Krishna, those pastimes evoked, eclipses the importance of the four great goals of life. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Nanda and the other Vrajavasis are Krishna's eternal companions and most dear devotees, semicolon. They only seem to obtain devotion for Krishna by Brahma's blessing, just as Krishna only apparently obtains Sambha as his son by the blessing of Sri Rudra. So what's all that about? It's in the Bhagavatam. I'll read the translation. You know, Sanatana Goswami sometimes just drops these little bombs over there and doesn't explain anything. Then you've got to go research what was that bomb all about. What's he talking about? Sambha was one of Krishna's sons, and he became his son by a blessing of Sri Rudra, according to Sanatana. Here's what it says, 3.1.30, Bhagavatam. In a previous birth, Sambha was born as Kartikeya in the womb of the wife of Shiva. And now he has been born in the womb of Jambavati, the most enriched wife of Krishna. And this is Bhagavatam purport, Prabhupada's purport. When the Lord appeared as Vasudev before Devaki and Vasudev, he appeared in his capacity as Narayana. Similarly, all the demigods of the heavenly kingdom appeared as associates of the Lord in the forms of Pradyumna, Sambha, Uddhava, etc. It is learned here that Kamadeva appeared as Pradyumna, Kartikeya as Sambha, and one of the Vasus as Uddhava. Because it was going way back to Canto 10, Chapter 1, Brahma turned to the demigods. Lord Vishnu said he's going to appear on earth. Fantastic. He said to tell you, you should all take birth on earth first to assist him in his pastimes. So their partial expansions did that, on the order of Brahma to do that. And thus, Kamadeva, one of the Vasus, Kartikeya, all of them served in their different capacities in order to enrich the pastimes of Krishna. 3.1.30, Bhagavatam. The address, O Bharata, also implies that Prikshit should already be aware of all of this. And then, so 3.7.128, we're just going to read a few verses directly from Brihat Bhagavatam, which I appreciate how beautifully Sanatana Goswami presents things. Next verse. Oh, Maharaj Prikshit, best of the Kurus, Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. On returning home from his trip, he at once took his son Krishna on his lap And by formally smelling Krishna's head, he undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. Commentary. This is from Canto 10, Chapter 6, Killing of Putana. He came back after paying his taxes. Vasudeva may also be able to claim Krishna as his son, but Nanda had an even greater right to consider Krishna Svaputra, his own son. This verse tells Nanda Maharaj's special glories, 10.6.43. Paragraph. After Nanda paid taxes to Kamsa and returned home from Madhupuri, he discovered that Krishna had killed the demon as Putana. Nanda was overjoyed to see his son alive and safe from near calamity. Though the Vrajavasi is astonished to see the great Rakshasi killed by Krishna, couldn't help but wonder what kind of powerful being Krishna really was. This heightened awareness of Krishna's greatness did not at all undermine Nanda Maharaj's firm conviction that Krishna is nothing more or less than his own dependent son. His affection for Krishna was too pure to be weakened by any distraction. This is repeated over and over. When Krishna shows divinity, Maharaj Nanda was unfazed. Yasoda sometimes started wondering, but then unfazed. So, when Nanda arrived home, he met Krishna, took him on his lap, and embraced him with enthusiasm. In ecstasy, Nanda smelled the hair on his son's head and felt the highest limit of happiness, paramam mudam. Or, if we split the first of these words as para, mam, the happiness Nanda felt at that moment was greater than the joy felt by the goddess of Lakshmi, Ma, when she serves her Lord. Nanda Maharaj deserves such pleasure because he is Udharadi. There's two meanings given here. A very saintly and generous devotee, Udharadi. On the occasion of Krishna's name-giving ceremony, for example, he gave away vast amounts of charity, both saintly and generous. The word Udharadi also means that he is very intelligent. After all, didn't he disregard all other possible benedictions and ask Brahma only for the boon of exclusive devotion for Krishna? Paragraph. One might question why this verse singles out the good fortune of Nanda Maharaj, since Mother Yashoda had also prayed for devotion to Krishna and had shared equally in Lord Brahma's blessing. In a previous life, Drona and Dara, Nanda and Yashoda had requested Brahma, quote, this is 10.8.49, two verses after the one looking at. Please permit us to be born on the planet Earth so that after our appearance, the Supreme Lord, the Personality Godhead, the Supreme Controller, the Master of all planets, will appear also and spread devotional service, the ultimate goal of life. Thus, those born in the material world may very easily be delivered from the miserable condition of materialistic life by accepting devotional service. Drona and Dara. Requesting a Brahma. Since both Nanda and Yashoda in a previous life had together offered the same prayer, shouldn't they both have the same ecstasy? The verse from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita highlights the ecstasy shown by Nanda Maharaj after the killing of Putana. But wasn't Mother Yashoda's ecstasy just like his? Or, since a mother normally loves her son even more than the child's father does, shouldn't her love have been even greater than his? Paragraph, yes. Although Nanda and Yashoda both have extraordinary love for Krishna, her love for Krishna is greater. The special ecstasy shown here by Nanda Maharaj was occasioned by severe circumstances. Nanda had just returned from an extended trip to Mathura city. Upon coming home from a distant journey, one only naturally feels special love for one's dear ones, as he has not seen them for some time, and feels extra eagerness and happiness. Sri Yashoda always felt that high level of ecstatic affection. Paragraph. Actually, the love of great devotees of the Lord like Nanda and Yashoda is always fully developed to its ultimate limit, semicolon, it can never diminish or increase. Thus, the constant love Nanda Maharaj has for Krishna could not have changed into something new on his return from Mathura. Only in imitation of ordinary family relationships does it appear to have changed. Or, looking at this in a different way, the rare treasure of pure prema constantly give rise to all varieties of endearing emotions perceived as newer and newer at every moment. This distinguishes the ecstasy of prema from the joy of mere liberation. Nanda Maharaj's apparent momentary increase in love was simply a special ecstasy occasioned by the circumstance of his coming home. Sanatana Goswami is wonderful. So the next text, 129, quote, this is from the Damodara Lila, chapter 9, 2 verses 18 and 20. Because of Mother Yashoda's hard labor, her whole body became covered with perspiration, and the flowers were falling from the braids of her hair. When child Krishna saw his mother thus fatigued, he became merciful to her and agreed to be bound. Commentary. This verse and the next, 10, 9, 18, and next is 20, glorifying Mother Yashoda, who was more advanced in Krishna consciousness than even Nanda Maharaj. One morning, she wanted to churn butter herself for her son, Krishna, who was very fond of fresh butter. With great love in her heart, she set about the laborious task of churning from the previous day's yogurt. Just then, however, Krishna rose from his sleep and demanded her breast milk. She began to feed him while continuing to churn. But he again interfered by grabbing the churning rod. And then she noticed that the milk she had put in the stove was boiling over. So, although Krishna had not finished drinking, she quickly put him aside to run to the kitchen. When she came back after a moment, she found that the churning pot had a hole in its bottom, obviously made by the nearby grinding stone. And Krishna had disappeared. Paragraph. She looked around and found him inside the house. And as she watched unseen from the corridor, she saw him sitting on a large upturned mortar, stealing butter and feeding it to the young monkeys. She picked up a stick and came up to him from behind, but he ran away, making her chase him around before she finally caught up to him. Seizing her crying son, she scolded him sharply, but then, not wanting to frighten him too much, she threw away the stick. Still, she wanted to do the right thing for his benefit, so she decided to punish him by tying him up. She tied a rope around his waist, but as people know throughout the world, the rope was too short by just two finger widths. She tried tying together all the rope she could find in the house, but still the rope remained short by the same length. Seeing this astonished her. Finally, Krishna, choosing to reward his mother for her strenuous devotional effort, agreed to let her bind him. Paragraph. Although Krishna's all spiritual body is beyond the limitations of time and space and the individuality of objects. Interesting phrase. Beyond the individuality of objects. He responded mercifully to the strenuous labor of his mother. He cannot be bound by anyone. But in his exceptional mercy, he allowed himself to be tied. Taking the alternative reading, Sva Matuhu, his own mother, instead of Sa Matuhu, we get the idea that Yashoda is eternally established in this intimate relationship with him. And so, she certainly deserves his special mercy. When she tried to bind him, Krishna submitted to her effort because of her exalted love, which was evident externally by the perspiration on her limbs and by the falling of the flowers from her hair. And then the next text, 130. Our commentators say, starting from the first verse through the verse number 20 of chapter 9, it's specifically dedicated to explaining the exceptional, glorious position of Mother Yashoda, even amongst all of the other elders, at least, gopas and gopis. She is superlative, and here's why. So, text 20. Neither Brahma, nor Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who always seeks refuge at the chest of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. Shukadeva speaking. Commentary. While describing the good fortune of Mother Yashoda, Shukadeva Goswami became more and more amazed, and the hairs on his body stood on end. Although many devotees of Krishna obtained Krishna's favor, the mercy received by Yashoda was most wonderful. While thinking of this, Shukadeva Goswami spoke this verse, 10.9.20. Paragraph. Shukadeva affectionately refers to Mother Yashoda as Gopi, alluding to her privileged status as the wife of the king of the Gopas. The favor she obtained from Krishna was never achieved by Krishna's son, Brahma, by Krishna's friend, Shiva, or by his dear consort, Lakshmi, who always resides in his chest. How could lesser persons than these ever receive as much favor as Yashoda? Yashoda is a better devotee than Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the goddess Lakshmi, because all three of them merely worship Krishna with reverence as the Supreme Godhead, but she has pure affection for him as her son. The Damodar pastime in which Yashoda tied Krishna with rope demonstrated the power of God to resist all attempts to capture him, but when Yashoda witnessed Krishna's omnipotence, her pure maternal love only increased. Final paragraph, and we're done for the evening. To emphasize the unique position of Yashoda, in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami repeats three times the negation, na, so not Shiva, not Brahma, not goddess of fortune. The three great personages of the material world may obtain great favor from Krishna, but they are unable to please Krishna or obtain as much favor as Yashoda. Most people living in the material world are much less fortunate than Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi, and cannot even imagine the sublime position of Mother Yashoda. To sincere aspirants for spiritual perfection, Krishna give liberation from the bondage of birth and death, but his love for his mother is so special that he lets her bind him with ropes meant for tying cows to some pure Vaishnavas, Krishna grants the mukti, the superior liberation of elevation to his own world, to live up, to live in his proximity in transcendental bliss. Let him grant this vimukti to fortunate souls, but even such Vaishnavas cannot expect the favor shown to Mother Yashoda. So all that's a Brihad Bhagavatamrita expansion on that one verse spoken by Parikshit Maharaja. And now we're going to get the answer, the Drona and Dara story, starting with text 48. In Lagu Bhagavatamrita, there is further mention, as there is here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, of different personalities from the heavenly realm who took part in Krishna's pastimes, who's who, kind of. It's stated there that in the heavenly realm, the partial expansions of Vasudeva and Devaki are Kashyapa and Aditi. So if we recall, when Krishna says in chapter 3 to Devaki and Vasudeva, in your previous lifetimes, Sutapan Prishni, remember? Sutapan Prishni? Sutapan Prishni. You know the pastime of Krishna's birth? Krishna Janmashtami?
Yes.
Where did Krishna take his birth? In the prison house of Kamsa, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. The eighth child of Devaki, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So when he appeared, what did he look like? Four arms, right?
Yeah, four arms.
Four arms. You ever see anybody that appears with four arms?
No.
No way. And so they then offered prayers to him, starting with Vasudev, Supreme Lord, this and that, Devaki, Super Soul, the controller, everything, this and that. And then she said, can you do this? Can you serve a childlike form, please? Because if Kamsa comes to know the eighth child was born, he's going to come and try to kill you. And so maybe if you're a little baby, we can hide you somewhere. But he's the Supreme Lord, and she knows it, and she's asking that. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. So what does Krishna say? You too, Vasudeva and Devaki, you have pleased me very much by your extended austerities in previous lifetime as Sutapa and Prishni. Prishni is the wife. Sutapa is the husband. Long austerities. And what did you want? So I came before you. And they, because I know what your desire is, you'd like to have a son like me. So I'll do better than that. In three lifetimes, Sutapan Prishni, I was known during that time as Prishni Garba, right? And then the next lifetime, who were the mother and father? Kashyapa and Aditi, right? And who was the son of Kashyapa and Aditi? Starts with a V.
Vamana.
Yeah. Vamana. So Kashyapa, listen to this. This is in Lagu Bhagavatamrita. Kashyapa and Aditi, there's a story of how they became Kashyapa and Aditi, but there's another story too. That is, they're partial expansions of the eternal associates of Krishna in Krishna Loka by the name Vasudeva and Devaki. They exist in the heavenly realm. I'm raising my arm up here. This is the heavenly realm up here. And they, Kashyapa and Aditi, when Brahma said, Okay, Devas, your partial expansion should take birth on earth to assist Krishna's pastime. Kashyapa, partial expansion, entered into the body of Vasudeva. And Aditi's partial expansion entered into the body of Devaki. But they're actually eternal associates of Krishna. Eternal associates of Krishna, eternal associates of Krishna. But then there's pastimes. Because Vasudeva is the son of Shurasena, and so on and so on. There's pastimes. They have the eternal position, and they're going to have Krishna as their son. But Bhagavad Bhagavatamrita says not just those principal names mentioned, but you know, so many associates of Krishna and Braja, specifically even says, you know, cows and this isn't that. The pastimes of Krishna are not ordinary. It's only one in a day of Brahma. That's a long time. Once in every 1,000 yuga cycles. That's a long time. So if they want to take part in Krishna's pastime, so they get the instruction from via Brahma, from Lord Vishnu to do that. Come and join my pastimes. So they do that. And they're really happy to do that. And Krishna is really happy to make them happy, so it's a big festival. But the main message that we're hearing, and we're going to hear more in the concluding parts of chapter 8 and the beginning parts of chapter 9, is the for all of the good fortune of all of these different residents in Braja, Nanda and Jasoda are most exalted, and Yasoda is most exalted amongst all of them, at least as far as the childhood pastimes are concerned. So she's revered very much in the Bhagavatam, and rightly so, and the reasons why it is so are being given. One other thing that I've been mentioning occasionally with this section, the pastimes in Vrindavan have a special role in developing spontaneous love. The spontaneous love, or Raganuga Bhakti, it takes one beyond simply performing regulations. Are for the purpose of purification on the one side, and the other side is developing reawakening our natural affinity for service, being aware, conscious, absorbed in our mood of service to the Supreme Lord. The vidhis of Sanada Bhakti are for that purpose. And hearing about meditating, remembering, and getting absorbed in the activities of Krishna in Vrindavan, and particularly the eternal associates in Vrindavan, it awakens this spontaneous love. And in due course of time, attraction for one of those in the spontaneous love position becomes one's absorption. Just this morning, we were reading about the good fortune of the weaver. Did you hear the morning class?
No.
When Krishna was entering Mathura from Vrindavan, who took him on the chariot to Vrindavan, to Mathura?
Akrura.
And then when he reached Mathura, what did he do? He met a washerman.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And he just asked, and very politely, he asked the washerman some clothes. He got a really nasty remark. So Krishna took the clothes anyways, along with, you know, just the touch of his fingertips. It wasn't a judo chop, he just touched it, and his head fell off. But that same set of fingers, when he touched the chin of Kubja, because after the clothing came the, you know who Kubja is, right? Kubja? She's a hunchback woman who was in service to the king, just like the washerman was in service to the king, and her service was bringing scented oil and sandalwood paste and very nice fragrances for the king. So Krishna didn't even have to ask her. She just walked right up and said, here's some sandalwood paste and some nice oil. The hunchback, Krishna smiled. He put his toe on her toe and it tips her under and boop. She became straight and beautiful. And then came the weaver, making cloth and other kinds of ornaments and decorations. So we read this morning from Gopal Champu that the weaver had heard about Krishna from some of his friends who had been to Vrindavan and seen Krishna, and he heard about Krishna, what Krishna looked like, but he was afraid of Kamsa, so he didn't go. But just from hearing, he was absorbed in meditation. Just from hearing, he was absorbed in meditation. And that meditation transformed his existence. So much so that when Krishna came, he went to the weaver. The weaver offered the articles. And you know what Krishna did? Here's what Gopal Champu said. Just by his glance, he transformed the body of the weaver to a spiritual form of qualities like Krishna, and gave him all these nice benedictions. You'll live a healthy life, you'll be very prosperous, you'll be, you know, this and that and the other thing. And then Gopal Champu quotes something that I looked it up. Here's what it says, that we're going to read this again tomorrow morning because it was in reference to the morning class. But I'll read it just now. The oil bug absorbed in the wasp becomes a wasp. I don't know what an oil bug is, but will not a person absorbed in Krishna quickly become like Krishna? So I was curious, because I know I read it somewhere, but I think there's more than one reference, but here's one. This is from Uddhava Gita, Canto 11, Chapter 9, Text 23. And I was thinking that as I walked in and saw the little wasp nest by your door. Here's what the translation reads, 11.9.23. Once, a wasp forced a weaker insect to enter his hive and then kept him trapped there. In great fear, the weak insect constantly meditated on his captor, and without giving up his body, he gradually achieved the same state of existence as the wasp. Thus, one achieves a state of existence according to one's constant concentration. That's Krishna. And here's the purport. The following question may be raised. Since the weaker insect in this story did not physically change his body, how can it be said that he achieved the same state of existence as the wasp? Actually, by constant meditation upon a particular object, one's consciousness becomes filled with its qualities. Due to extreme fear, the smaller insect was absorbed in the characteristics and activities of a large wasp, and thus entered into the existence of the wasp. Due to such meditation, he actually took the body of a wasp. in his next life. From a bug to a wasp. Pretty good, huh? But the point is, what you meditate upon, that wherever the mind goes, that's where you go. And it affects consciousness. So we have so many opportunities in our sadhana, bhakti, to bring our mind to transcendence and out of duality. But the braja prema feature of 10th canto Bhagavatam is it takes one beyond transcendence and undivided, exceptional love. Krishna maybe. Proportionate to one's absorption. It's like, you know, chanting distractedly and chanting attentively are worlds of difference. And, you know, to get to the stage of chanting with absorption, it takes some purification and it takes some mercy, takes some attraction from the all-attractive Krishna to take us there. And the hearing of the Bhagavatam helps us as well, because absorption in the thought of the pastimes of Krishna, the devotees of Krishna, hearing about Jasoda again and again and again and again and again, we'll start thinking about how wonderful is Jasoda. That's purifying. And it brings one into this position of spontaneous love. Okay, so see if there's any discussion. It's 8 o'clock. We've been going for 1 hour. Lots of nice stories, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Easy to pay attention, especially with your brother and sister not here.
This is a rare moment for us.
I think I have heard for the first time in 3 years a full lecture today. Otherwise, at the temple also, I have to go early. I mean, he takes care of them sometimes, and anyways, but yeah.
Maybe you have more coronavirus situations. Come again sometime. Look at her, she's laughing. Enjoy. Go ahead. Yeah.
Guru Maharaj, what is the relation? I mean, Lord Ram's parents, they are also his devotees, but are they...
Eternal.
They are eternal.
Yes.
But are they Nanda and Yashoda?
No.
Like they are...
No.
So they,
nor are
they
the expansions of Nanjindrasoda. They are who they are. Ram's eternal associates.
Well,
yeah.
Who are the Vasus? Because even in the Uddhava is a Vasu, but the sons of Shantanu and Ganga, except including Bhishma, are also Vasus. So they came, and then a few generations in human time later, which was probably nothing in heavenly time, they again appeared as, because it's all in the Mahabharata.
Yes, you want to know what the Vasus are.
And how many? Are there only 7 or 8? Or are there...
There's 8, it's not clear. I've researched it, you know, reasonably thoroughly. It's not clear. It often speaks of 8, but it seems like it's 8 principle, not just only 8. And it's a function, they're warrior-like personalities. And they're very powerful fighters and so on. So that's, you know, and they're in the heavenly realm. As far as I can understand, it's not in Bhuvarloka, it's in Svargaloka, but exactly where, it doesn't say where. Somewhere in Svargaloka is the realm where the Vasus reside, and they do protecting activities. They're that kind of kshatriya, warrior-like kshatriyas. Now, Uddhava is not a warrior-like personality. Although he's in the royal family, he's a ministerial-like personality. But that's who the Vasus are. Yeah.
The demigods, Lord Brahma told them to go take birth on the earth planet before Lord Krishna appears.
Yeah.
So do the demigods have their free will? They can choose to which family they take birth in?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
You mentioned their Vibhinnamsha.
Huh?
I don't know if I heard clearly, but you mentioned something about their... Was the Vibhinnamsha of the demigods? Or
no, Krishna? The Angshas of the... Okay. Of Angshas, not Vibhinnamsha, Angshas.
Okay.
Partial expansions of...
Of the demigods.
Of the demigods.
Okay.
So to take birth under, it's not like the place became vacant.
Mm-hmm.
They left a sign out saying, you know, out to lunch and back after Krishna's pastimes are over. Doesn't say that. Their partial expansions came and then resumed the position. Now, how that partial expansions and did they choose, I want to take birth over here, over there? There's no
description about it.
Yeah, nothing. Anything?
One question I had tried to ask in an earlier class, but online there is a very limit on number of characters, so I couldn't ask properly. I was thinking of when we say that the holy name is not different from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking yes and no, maybe, because is it a substitute for seeing Krishna in person? For example, when the eternal associates are in the mood of separation, and they are not with Krishna and they are thinking of him, is chanting his name an exact gives them all the pleasure that they would by actually interacting with him? So from our perspective, is the holy name a means to attaining Krishna's personal, or that is also the goal? That's what I'm...
It's the second one.
Okay.
There's different nomenclature. Bhaktivinoda Thakur uses nomenclature that comes from Rupa Goswami's Namastaka, and you can look it up, Namastaka. But there, you know, it's the name and the form of the name. The name and the form of the name, of the name of the person name. So Nama and Nami and Panda Purana. Non-different, absolutely non-different, absolutely non-different. There's Krishna's Swarup, and there's the form of Krishna's name, and they're non-different. There's Krishna and his Swarup, and they're non-different. And then there's the name and the form of Krishna's name. Rupa Goswami, his language is very clear.
So when the
tips of the toes of his lotus feet, that's the name. So the name has form, and the name has feet, form has feet, and feet have toes, and toes have tips of their toes. And the tips of the toes of the form of the holy name is worshipped by the most effulgent parts of the Vedas, the Upanishads. The brilliance of the Upanishads are worshipping the tips of the toes of lotus feet of Nama Prabhu, person with form, within the name. Not over there is the name and over there is the form, it's the person.
So when the name reveals, I'm thinking of the mantra upasana process.
Yes.
Or the story
where
Rupa Goswami is participating in the leelas and he laughs and
yes.
the brahmana
yes.
comes. So
yes.
So is he chanting the name and engrossed and also viewing the pastimes? Or
he's participating in the pastime, not just viewing.
Yeah.
Not like watching, you know, on the screen over here what the kids were doing when we came in. He's participating. That's, you know, in the mature stage. That's not mantra pasana, that's svara sakhi. Okay, online.
We have one question from Satish Bhatnagar. In Shikshashtakam, we hear that there are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. But we know that we know that there are so many rules and regulations. That is, names need to be received through Diksha, we chant with rapt attention, etc. How do we reconcile these two sides?
I don't see what the problem is. What's the problem? Do you understand what the problem is? What, from the question?
He's saying that in the Shikshashtakam it says
no
we don't
special.
Need to chant. We can just chant whenever we want. There are no rules, hard and fast rules.
And then here are some rules. You have to
here
do this
rules.
And you have to
yeah.
do that and the other thing.
Yeah.
The my thought in this regard is Namabhas and Shuddha Nam. You with me? Namabhas, no hard and fast rules. And Shuddha Nam is with the, you know, there's considerations. And it's say the same thing differently. When we say, you know, all you need is the holy name, nothing else is needed. So when you take the holy name, then you have to engage with the name or the person in the name with intelligence. And there's details and details and details, and that's the bhakti process. There's details and details. You can say, you know, it's not rules exactly, but it's the details, rapt attention. So chant the holy name means with rapt attention. And anyone that doesn't receive Diksha can chant Hare Krishna mantra. But to get the full effect, it is a great asset. You know, if you're Shukadeva Goswami, you don't need Diksha. But if you're not Shukadeva Goswami, you need Diksha. And the reason we need it is Krishna wants us to have that assistance of receiving the mercy of the disciplic succession in that way. So anyone can chant Krishna's name. People sometimes chant even without even knowing they're chanting Krishna's name. And they're getting benefit. But to get the full benefit, then there are these conditions or qualifications that's implicit in chant and be happy. Or everything is within the name. We don't need anything else.
Yeah, more. This is from Sanchari. It's a long one. As was stated in a previous class, after a pure devotee leaves this world, they are within Krishna's pastime in the material universe, learning from the Nitya Siddha devotees. Are the partial expansions of the demigods different from those devotees who are experiencing Krishna's pastimes as apprentices? Are the devotees in Vrindavan exclusively and the demigods spread out among all the realms? Meaning the Vrajvasis are pure devotees and the demigods cannot enter unless they are pure as well.
Well, the answer, the short answer is yes. They're apprentices. Okay. They're not interested to eternal associates. They're in this other category.
I don't have more questions.
Okay. Anything over here? Anything?
No.
You're good.
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Oh, best of the listeners to the one class in 3 years.
Best of the listeners.
Any thoughts or any comments? You're good.
I have one question. You know, when Krishna's crying and or angry, he's actually happy, like in Damodarashtaka.
Yes, yeah.
When Yashoda was crying, he was crying. Is he actually sad or is he just pretending?
He's not sad. But he's not pretending. He's feeling fear. Here's what Queen Kunti says. This is now Canto 1, Chapter 8. Queen Kunti says, I can't understand the love of Mother Yashoda. Because when Krishna sees that little, it's not a, not like a, you know, not like this thing, a lathi, there's a little thin stick, just like a, you know, little thicker than a straw, just this thing. But when he saw that in her hand, he cried. And he, as we say in the Damodarashtakam prayers, you know, the mascara around his eyes was dripping down his cheeks, and his body was shaking with fear. So she says, he was feared by fear personified. Now, I never met fear personified, but fear personified is afraid of Krishna. And Krishna is afraid of that little stick in Mother. So he was, if he was just pretending, oh, that's my script line, I'm supposed to be fearful and tremble, okay. No, he was actually fearful. Why? And how is that possible? And it's how it's possible because everything is inside Krishna. Is there anything that exists that's not in Krishna?
No.
No. Everything is in Krishna. So that's in Krishna, but it's a transcendental kind of fear. It's not like when you and I fear something. We see, I don't know, you see a snake. Huh?
Geckos in the backyard.
We don't like them.
You don't like snakes?
Lizards.
They live
on the
ground. Okay. I know somebody. Anyway, I won't go into it. yeah, I know somebody that's afraid of lizards. So when you see a lizard, you go, but that's not what Krishna did. It's not that kind of fear. It's a transcendental kind of fear. And what's it? How? What's the difference? Well, one is temporary, limited, and you know, we're feeling unprotected. But Krishna is full. It's just one of his transcendental, unlimited transcendental powers and potencies and feelings. Because just like that, the fear is gone. Just like that. It's a transcendental emotion. Transcendental fear. It's not play acting.
Yeah, it's transcendental.
Yeah, there you go. You have something?
It's about the Krishna book, but not related to this. I was reading the, telling her the past time when Krishna and Arjuna go to Mahavishnu for the sons of the Brahmanas. Mm. And when I read that, I was thinking, Mahavishnu better not be inhaling because so I just typically you always think of him as in Yoga Nidra, when he inhales and exhales, you know, the universe has come and go, but there he's coming out of his palace and talking to them, and I told her he didn't inhale because we are still here. So that was a very enigmatic. We don't hear much about Mahavishnu.
We don't hear much about Mahavishnu, that's a fact. Yeah.
We have a question from Giri Botikota. Hearing Lord's birth pastimes, our hearts go to Gokula and Vrindavan. Can we still visit these transcendental places / Nanda Maharaj home in Gokula and Vrindavan?
Well, I don't recommend that you go to Nanda Maharaj's home in Gokula because the pandas there are brutal. But you can go to Nandagram, and they're less brutal. They're a little, you know, animated, or like, but they're not excessive. The ones in Gokula are excessive. Okay, we're done. Prabhupada ki jai. Right.